My guest at this time is Derek Cohen, director of Right on Crime. Earlier this month, Mr. Cohen took part in the Prison Reform Summit at the White House and came away encouraged by what he sees as the Trump administration's commitment to reducing crime and giving offenders better opportunities to reform and become a positive presence in their communities upon reentry. And last week, the House of Representatives passed the First Step Act, which looks to make progress on those goals. And Derek, thanks so much for being with us.
Glad to be with you, Greg.
So the First Step Act, a bipartisan bill, passed the House 360 to 59, so a lot of Democrats getting on board. It faces a more uncertain future in the Senate, which we'll get to in just a moment. But what exactly would this legislation do?
Well, you see, Greg, this deals just with prison reform as it's understood. This doesn't deal with sentencing. It doesn't deal with policing or some of the, I would say, more contentious and less consensus issues that are out there in criminal justice. So this is all folks that have already been sentenced. And what this bill actually does is it does not alter that sentence in any way. What it does is it looks at how we have these folks in prison. What are we doing to lower their recidivism, lower their chances of reoffending once they're out? And that includes criminogenic rehabilitation. It includes education. It includes training. It includes making the decision before we plug one of those folks into one of those programs that we make sure that is a program that that particular individual needs, as opposed to just spinning our tires or wasting our money. It also tries to move individuals closer to their home to better facilitate reentry, so family can still come and visit, so that prison ministries that might exist in their community might be able to visit them within the facility to really kind of deliver that warm handoff. We've come to understand it in criminal justice to make sure we're just not shooting somebody out the door and basically hoping they don't reoffend, which has kind of been the status quo up until this point.
Get a little more specific, if you can, on the programs you were talking about to kind of tailor these people to the right rehabilitation program so they can be contributing members to society when they get out. How do you do that? How do you do that effectively? What works?
Well, certainly. And I think it goes without explanation, at least in terms of remedial education and job training. I think we both know what that entails. But as far as the rehabilitation on criminogenic thoughts, you know, behavioral traits, things that are basically predictive of criminal offending. So let's say that somebody has temper problems or doesn't have the skills to think through a situation before responding in a way that would be not necessarily criminal, but, you know, at least antisocial. So classes like that, known as cognitive behavioral therapy classes, just for example, actually reduce the odds of that offender reoffending if they don't have that particular skill set. Now, what this bill does is it establishes is what's known as a risk needs assessment. And that risk needs assessment is basically an instrument that diagnoses the offender. And when it comes back, it says, oh, well, this individual has trouble, you know, antisocial personality traits, antisocial cognitions, and they also have an antisocial peer group. Those three things alone are incredibly detrimental to success on reentry. And they're also things that we can change. You know, the antisocial peer group can be changed by both supervision back in the community. That can be through at a halfway house or through home confinement. It could be the antisocial cognition and behavioral traits, you know, could actually be trained away as well.
We're talking with Derek Cohen, director of Right on Crime. And Derek, this might get a little bit away from the legislation, but one of the biggest hurdles for those wanting to play it straight after time in prison is obviously finding a good job. If you and I apply for the same job with roughly the same skills and experience, and I'm an ex-con and you're not, you're probably going to get the job just about every time, especially if I've been a violent offender. So how do you deal with that? Because obviously the discouragement from getting rejected time after time is going to make going back to what was happening before seem more attractive.
Exactly. And I think this is a good illustration of where the left and the right are actually split on this. So folks on the left tend to support, more affirmative programs, like actually providing folks with jobs or compelling people to not inquire about criminal histories, ban the box, as it's known. What the conservative answer to that is simply indemnifying landlords for renting to these folks for per se negligence, indemnifying employers for employing these folks, make it more attractive for these folks to actually be hired. You know, the Society for Society of Human Resource Management, came out, I believe, 2 weeks ago with a survey, And many employers are actually saying, you know, some of our, you know, formerly criminal justice involved employees are actually some of our best workers, not only because, you know, they did have some trouble getting jobs on the way out. Now they're actually understanding that, you know, no job is guaranteed. And they're grateful for the work they have, but also because some of the rehabilitation programs that they took advantage of, not were forced upon them, but that they took advantage of while incarcerated.
Derek, you mentioned that the First Step legislation does not deal with sentencing, and that's a problem for some organizations, particularly on the left, like the Brennan Center for Justice. They say this is a half measure because it doesn't get into mandatory minimum sentencing, which they contend needlessly incarcerates many people longer than they ought to be. So they're worried that this is going to be all we see legislatively. And so if we're going to do a bill, they want this to be in there. They don't think Republicans necessarily are going to do a whole lot more legislatively. So what's your response to that? Should this be in the bill, and how should it be addressed at all?
Well, there are 2 points on that. The first on whether or not sentencing should be in the bill. Yes, I actually believe that there are some prudent sentencing reforms that pretty much everybody could get behind, such as the 924C stacking provision, wherein it triggers a mandatory minimum if you are selling, or if an individual is selling drugs out of their house and they have a legally owned firearm in that house. That counts basically as a violent offense because it is trafficking drugs with a gun. I think that patching that, even the attorney general has expressed skepticism about leaving that in the code. But the problem is that there's no consensus as to what a package of sentencing reform looks like on the left or the right. Even folks on the left are not uniform behind getting, I would say, some of the more procedural issues in sentencing, like when we deal with issues like mens rea. They don't actually want to get that in there as well. However, the idea that, well, this is the only bite at the apple we get, therefore we should actually not do, you know, we should do something strong or do nothing at all, is a completely self-defeating argument. If we're only getting one bite at the apple and you said there's not much appetite for anything else, you are literally making that choice between a modest bill, the bill that's in front of us right now, or nothing. And I think that that is a tough sell to these families that actually have individuals incarcerated, family members incarcerated, that have to drive over 500 miles to go see their relatives, that actually are getting put in programming that doesn't help. You know, this is going to help people. And the fact that that is being forsaken because the perfect is the enemy, you know, making the perfect the enemy of the good, is an unconscionable argument that we don't make here at Red on Crime.
Just about a minute or two left in our conversation here, Derek. As I mentioned at the top, you took part in the White House Prison Reform Summit in mid-May. In your press release, you say, quote, paired with legislation currently moving through Congress, which is what I think we just talked about, the results of this summit will help ensure that as the prisoners reenter society, as 95% will, that their risk of reoffending is as low as possible. Get a little more specific. What are these ideas that came up at the summit that you think would be most effective?
Well, certainly. And a lot of the participants in the summit arrived for the 11 o'clock briefing, which is the one that was in the ballroom. But prior to, we were also meeting in the executive office building starting at 8:30 on specific applications. You know, David Mulhausen, the director of the National Institute for Justice and the chair of the president's Federal Reentry Council, chaired a panel on how do we measure recidivism, you know, in the academic context. There were other panels that were focused on, you know, innovations in reentry and what can be what's going on in the states that can be ported over into the federal system. These were all things that were discussed with key stakeholders in the process just to get the ball rolling from the Federal Reentry Council, which President Trump constituted back in April.
We'll be watching. Sounds like there's perhaps quite a bit more coming on this front, which I'm sure would make you quite pleased. Derek, thanks very much for being with us.
Anytime, Greg.
Derek Cohen is director of Right on Crime. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.